Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It is time for Movies and Booze. Brian Lloyd, Linda Coogan and Dee Reddy are with us in the studio. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon.
Linda, go on, tell us.
So I picked two wines that are from the Irish Wine Show Star Winners. But you know me and the underdogs, okay? So one.
So they're not really winners.
They are. They're all winners.
They came third.
Yes, the red did come third. And I would argue that it should have got better results.
Okay, fair enough.
So a nice Romanian Chardonnay blend and a Zanato Rapassa. So it's a kind of rich, full-bodied Italian style, gorgeous for Christmas. Are we allowed to say Christmas? Yes, I'm sure we are. But they're amazing. So the white is the gold winner in its category, and the red is the bronze. And it's like,
you don't get much. I mean, you don't hear much about Romanian wine.
I know. That's why I always love the underdogs. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and again, the company who makes this, they make most of all the wine from the biggest winery in Romania and export a lot of bottles under different labels and that. So I think this is a little hidden gem.
Okay, so we wouldn't get much in the way of Romanian wine.
You'd be surprised. No, you don't get that many, but there are a couple, Pinot Noirs, Chardonnays, and even Wildflower is a range that's in O'Brien's that have a Pinot Grigio.
All right, so
Shiraz, they're popping up.
Yeah, are there any Romanian grapes?
There are. There is one in the blend here, and you're going to make me attempt to say it as well, which I will attempt later.
Okay. How many X's does it have in it?
Interesting.
Right, so the two movies today is Hugh Grant. Heretic sounds like a scary movie.
It is a scary movie, yeah.
And is this Hugh Grant being scary?
It is, yeah, very scary, yeah. Oh. Yeah, but like, I mean, the last time he would have done a horror film would have been way back in the 80s in this film called Lair of the White Worm, if you remember that.
No.
Ken Russell? No, nothing? Cool.
Yeah, it must be a classic.
It was a Bram Stoker novel, actually.
Really?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But so in this, he basically plays a guy who traps these two Mormon missionaries in his house, and the three of them engage in this sort of sinister psychological battle of wits where he's essentially trying to get them to justify their faith in the Church of Latter-day Saints, and he's trying to kind of unravel their grip on religion by essentially holding like a 2-hour TED talk. And that sounds like, oh God, I'd rather watch paint dry. Mm. But it actually really holds up, and it holds up because of Hugh Grant and how kind of willing he is to just play a complete and utter terrible, terrible person on screen. He's really, really good at it. Like, because I think he's kind of obviously now he's transitioned out of like the rom-com lead. He's not doing that anymore. He's kind of going into more character stuff. Like if you saw him in Paddington 2.
Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Wow, I was going to ask, is it like Paddington 2, but
it's more kind of like a very, very well-read, awful person traps you in a room for an hour and a half and debates religion with you. And you would think that would be terrible, but it's actually great. And I can see I need to sell harder and more.
No, but because you know what, like people have had Mormons knock on their doors and there might be a brief fantasy of, I know, I'll invite them in and talk them out of it.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And that's exactly, I would bet you any money, the writer directors of this, Simon Beck and Brian Woods, I bet you that's their whole thing was that they were just tired of like Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons knocking to their door. And they were like, okay, what if we write a horror film around us bringing them in and then basically hammering them to death with like logic and reason and like syncretism and how most religion is absolute BS and blah, 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 blah. And then what comes of that? Like,
one of the most fascinating plus also grotesque interviews I've ever done on the show was a fella. Now, it was about 10 years ago, but he was in Texas and he had a harem of cars. Now, when I say he had a harem of cars, he had half a dozen cars and he would have sex with the cars.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
He would have sex with the cars. Now, he didn't go into detail as to how he had sex with the cars, but his favourite car...
I was wondering about the phrasing now.
He had a Volkswagen Beetle. And the way he got the Beetle was that these two Mormons knocked on his door one day and they said, you know, would you like to talk about Jesus? And your man goes, I wasn't looking at them. I was looking at their car. And he bought the car off them. And they thought, like, you know, they got a convert. But he was, like, actually humping the car that arrived in. For years after.
Wow.
Wow. So I'd say I wish he'd told them That would, I mean, imagine if you're a Mormon, that wouldn't go down very well.
No, because they're very
Mormon central.
They have a really weird thing. Have you been like
about having sex with cars? Well, I think just, we all do, really.
As would anyone. I mean, look, we're not here to kink shame.
Yeah. But like, well, consent. No one asked the car.
True. But like, no, but like Mormons do have a lot of weird things about sex anyway. So
yeah. I don't think it goes that far, though.
No, it doesn't go that far, but it's pretty odd, though. Like, yeah. I mean, there was polygamous marriage and then there was the religious underwear.
Yeah.
And
the, like, but the whole, they don't do all that anymore. Or some most of them don't.
The religious underwear, they still do.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, 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 they still do. And like Mormon fundamentalists still do the practice polygamy.
Yeah.
And there's this whole thing, there's this reality TV series that I have not been watching, but I've been watching kind of
Real Housewives of Mormonism or whatever.
Yeah, and they do, apparently Mormon unmarried couples do this thing called docking. Or soaking, which I'm not going to explain, but I'm.
But they do. Sounds like we've come back around. To
no,
cars.
But they do kind of light,
It's very. It's
like dogging almost. Like kind
yeah,
of thing.
They're really into weird stuff. Like no, but this thing.
Soft swinging. That's what it's called.
Yeah. But they do that. But they also do this thing called docking, which. Can I explain it?
No, not in a half term.
But
no.
Like it's. It's just, it doesn't make sense. I've heard it explained to me. It's like, that doesn't sound like it's enjoyable for anyone involved. Why would you do that?
Well, you could say that about being a Mormon in general.
True.
Really. And the second movie, it's about Christopher Reeve. Than it's a Superman movie.
Yeah, so it's called Superman, the Christopher Reeve story. It's essentially a documentary about his life and times, you know, growing up in this really well-bred American patrician family, and he had a very distant relationship with his father. He went to Juilliard, became a classically trained actor, you know, worked with John Houseman, the great John Houseman, who was like this like dawn of American theatre, then getting cast in Superman, and that just completely upended his perceived career to that point. How his career then kind of went through a lot of fallow periods. He was doing Merchant Ivory films, and then, of course, to the accident that really came to define him, I suppose, in the public eye post-Superman, you know?
Yeah.
And, really interesting documentary.
Yeah. Now, just, I suppose it's not unrelated to what we were just talking about. Teens don't want to see sex in movies and TV shows.
I mean,
is wrong with them?
Based on the conversation we've just had, I can kind of see their point. But it's, the University of California, the Los Angeles Center for Scholars and Storytellers, no less, have released
Sounds kind of made up, that
doesn't
place.
It? A bit. Yeah. It's a study called Teens and Screens, and it's basically looking into what the preferences are for teenagers in terms of their viewing material. And they found that 63.5% of adolescents prefer to see platonic relationships on screen. They're kind of over very sort of sex or romance driven plots. And it's a bit of a swerve. Like, it's given, I mean, I come from the generation where American Pie was riding high at the, no pun intended, at the box office for a long time. And then you had 16 Candles. And a lot of teen films were about that specific side of coming of age. But I do wonder, is it because they're no longer casting adults in their 20s to play teenagers, and therefore it becomes a lot more problematic to show on screen?
Could it be that they all have phones and they've all been looking at porn since
they were 12?
That is probably more to the point.
Yeah.
Or they're off docking somewhere.
Yeah, you'd go to see American Pie because, it's a bit risky.
Yeah.
Whereas now I was like,
It is such a big change. Like, there was a film that came out a couple of years ago with Rebel Wilson, where she played, it's actually kind of a bit of a guilty pleasure. It's quite funny. She plays a cheerleader who gets a knock on the head doing a cheer in the early 2000s and wakes up having come out of a coma 20 years later, and she's to finish her final year in high school. But there's all this stuff that would have been appropriate, like sexy dances or, you know, even the way they talk to each other. And it's played for high comedy that kids nowadays are just like, that's an appalling way to treat somebody. Or why would you dance so provocatively in front of your teacher?
Yeah. Why would you? Yeah, so that's fair enough. And Martha Stewart doesn't like the documentary about Martha Stewart.
I know. She has criticised it and said it makes me look like a lonely old lady. She's also apparently got a bit of beef with the soundtrack and the fact that it doesn't feature her old pal Snoop Dogg, which does seem like a bit of a miss on the filmmaker's part, to be fair.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, we were talking about this outside. It strikes me you couldn't be Martha Stewart without being a complete control freak. She's always had the utmost control over her own narrative and her own presentation. So it doesn't surprise me really that she wouldn't be able to unclench the fists of control.
Yeah. Are her and Snoop Dogg actually friends? I know they did adverts together and, you know, nudge-nudge, but...
It actually seems like they are. And it's a funny thing, when she came out of prison and then they became friends, it did seem like it was for show and it was very much for both of them to get a bit of publicity out of it. But to be fair, it seems to have been an enduring friendship. They're always popping up together at events and, you know, doing stuff on each other's social media channels. So it's one of the things that I kind of go, oh, fair play. Like that they did actually seem to genuinely have a friendship.
They both have wines as well, don't they?
I just don't see what they'd see in each other, really, or what they'd have in common. Well, now, maybe he's just like baked out of his gourd so much he thinks she's somebody else.
Well, they did a recipe for hash brownies once on her her thing. So that's a good crossover for them.
Yes. Okay. That's one thing. But see, but then that's a kind of a commercial thing rather than
totally an act. I think this is nothing more than just consumerism, capitalism run rampant. It's like we have one group of audience. We have another group of audience. Yeah. How can we get them to cross over? That's all it is. I'm sure they're pally. I'm sure they like hang out or whatever. But like, I mean, their friendship is completely contrived. Like, I mean, you look at those big ads. I mean, come on. Like, you're going to tell me their pair of them are hanging out?
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, because he's going to be using the long stem lighter to smoke like the ends of his pinners or whatever. Yeah. You know, like.
Yeah, in her pristine kitchen.
In her pristine kitchen. Yeah. Where are the hot rocks? You know, that kind of way. Where are all the pizza boxes lying ever? You know, where's like... You know, where's your homemade, half lung thing that you go and then, you know, do all that? Like, where's the bongs? You know, that kind of way. Don't sit there and tell me that they have a genuine friendship. They don't.
Right. Well,
okay. I think that's pretty definitive.
It's so clearly a load of crap. Like, it's so clearly just done purely for commercial reasons and nothing else.
Yeah.
No other reason for it.
I mean, I would have agreed with you at the start, but it is 20 years later. Like,
Yeah, but they're still making money on it. Them Bic ads, I can't open up my phone without seeing that feckin' Bic ad everywhere. Like, you know, that kind of way. Like,
I wonder, does Snoop Dogg still, I mean, you know, if he is, he's like rolling up all the time. Constantly.
Oh, no, he's not. I'm not sure. He's like, he's in his late 50s. Like, he, you know,
he's in his 70s, surely.
No, he's not that old. Like,
let's say 60s.
Okay, he's early.
Call it quits.
Okay.
You know, like like Willie Nelson, like stopped years ago. Like, you know,
did he?
Oh yeah, Willie Nelson stopped years ago. So I would imagine Snoop is.
Is he your benchmark?
Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson was only curious. That's
God, I'm sorry. Snoop was only 53. You're right.
I knew that. Yeah, yeah.
He looks older.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now Willie Nelson looks like about 3,000 years old.
But you know
fairness,
what?
But like,
I love Willie Nelson. Yeah, I will not hear a bad word.
Oh no, absolutely not. No, that's from like being on the road.
Yeah.
Stoned mostly.
Yeah. Him hanging out with Waylon Jennings, like the highwaymen.
Highwaymen.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Yeah. They're the thing. Let's have a drink. Let's have our legally sanctioned drug.
Okay. So, as I was saying, these are the Irish Wine Show winners. And this is an annual thing that happened for the last 20 odd years. The National Off License Association put together a group of judges and they get all the wines lined up in different categories blind, covered up. So two people taste them at a time and they have to agree on a score, kind of a point between each other. And these were the overall winners then. So this is Papa Ruda Chardonnay with a native Romanian grape called Vitascia Regala. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's 60% Chardonnay and 40% of this other grape. And you were asking, Dee, about is it oaked? And I was like, well, what do you think? Does it taste like it's oaked?
It doesn't really.
No, I wouldn't have thought so either.
Well, it has had a kiss of oak. Okay, so it hasn't been spelled. What are you laughing at?
I'm not, I swear I'm not.
And it was a kiss of hope, but there was no tongue.
Yeah. Between the docking and the kiss of the eye, I mean, it's, you know.
So usually wines are aged in oak barrels, okay? Mm. So this is a wine that's under 15 euro. It's 15 euro, right? So they're not going to use an oak barrel for aging this wine because it costs too much money.
Yeah.
A barrel could cost between 500 and 5 grand for a barrel. Okay, so you're adding 3 to 25 euro onto any bottle of wine. So this has actually spent 3 months on French oak in staves, so planks of wood.
Oh,
so,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what they did with the really nasty Chardonnays in the 90s that we all ended up hating, that they overdid it. It was a real artificial taste. Mm. But this just has a kiss of, with no tongue, of oak that it just gives a little nuance, a little bit of depth, a bit of concentration and complexity to the wine. But you still have all that fresh, gorgeous, really easy, soft fruit. You get some melon, some peach, some pear. And it's really soft and floral and everything. Do you like
it's really nice, yeah.
It's lovely. But people who don't really like Chardonnay who'd say, oh, I don't like it, I'd say try this. Do you know, it's definitely not an oaky bomb or anything like that. I had it with butter chicken and flatbreads. Ooh. And it was absolutely delicious. So think creamy dishes, creamy pasta, anything like that, butter chicken, lovely roast chicken with all the trimmings and all that. I think magic.
To kind of cut through.
Yeah, butter popcorn as well. Do you know what I mean? Just anything buttery, a little bit of creamy will bring out the richness of this. So this won gold and it's 15 euro and you can get it in lots of the independent off licenses, including Barnhills, McHugh's, Bradley's in Cork, Martin's in Fairview and Jeudevin in Port Marnock.
Okay, fantastic stuff.
Delish.
Someone's texted in with a clarification on the contentious Willie Nelson situation.
Oh yeah.
Willie Nelson didn't quit weed.
Oh.
He just moved to edibles rather than smoking.
Ah.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
So he was just chewing away there, happy as Larry. And someone else says, the kids of today have it so easy. You used to have to stay up late, watch an entire terrible film, hoping you might see a bit of boo. True for you.
It's true.
It's absolutely true. Now,
like Trading Places was the first time I ever saw a naked woman's chest. Like,
well, back
Jamie
for your book there because there's loads.
Trading Places, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Trading Places. Sorry.
We tried to watch that a couple of Christmases ago as a family and it was like,
oh, yeah.
Okay. That was obviously edited on RTE when we would have watched it before.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
Trading Places.
I don't think I've ever seen the
Trading Places.
No, I've seen that.
I just don't remember the boob scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, there's a bit in it. Yeah, no, it's.
Oh, wow.
You remember it.
Anyway.
Hard to miss.
So, what movie do you want? Would you like to do Heretic first?
Yeah, start with Heretic.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll take a break after that. There will be a clip of Heretic filled with boobs. Back in a minute.
As I understand it, stop me when I go wrong, he was visited in the night by an angel called Moroni.
Moroni.
Moroni. Who showed him where he could locate some golden plates near his home. His mysterious translation of those plates form the basis of this.
Wow! No, you read more than we do. No, seriously, we should be more like you, Mr. Reed. Mr. Reed.
Pie smells amazing.
And now that you've been studying the Book of Mormon, how does it make you feel?
Can you guess what kind of pie she's making?
Is it blueberry pie?
It is blueberry pie.
I knew it, my favorite.
Going back, can I ask, how did your father pass away?
Okay, that's Heretic. So at that point in the film, Hugh Grant's obviously comfortable enough, or got them, the Mormons, comfortable enough to tell them all sorts of personal stuff.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like, it's really about him trying to essentially just shake their faith and kind of get them to kind of talk about it in a very sort of real way, because there's two Mormon missionaries in it. One was brought up in the church, who was that one you heard there that was kind of a bit more upbeat, if you like. And she has just known nothing else but the Mormon church, and she has a very kind of shallow understanding of her own religion and all the rest of it. Whereas her friend, the one that she's with, it was like her mother, I think, was a Mormon and her father wasn't, and she has a lot more kind of questions about it, but she's obviously much more in depth with it. But Hugh Grant's character is on a completely different level. Like, he has actually, there's a scene in it where he brings the both of them into this library, and he basically goes on this 10-minute monologue that basically explains, for lack of a better word, that all religion is essentially just one from the other, from the other. And he uses, like, you know, the Hollies song, All I Need Is the Air I Breathe, which is actually very similar to Radiohead's Creep, which is then very similar to a Lana Del Rey song. And he's kind of using that to explain syncretism. And syncretism is essentially where, you know, in one part of the world, like, for example, Zoroastrianism, it was in ancient Persia, and, you know, they celebrated on December 25th. But then that became what we know as Christmas today.
That's because part of that, that's very, because a certain amount of the Israelites were brought to Persia, and that's where they got the idea of Christmas. That's where they got the idea of the virgin part. They came back with those ideas.
Correct. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. And then, like, it goes even into how, like, you know, Mithraism could have potentially become the religion of the Roman Empire and the religion that Christianity now is, were it not for the fact that Emperor Justinian, you know, rejected it and blah, 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 blah. So he basically goes in this 10-minute, like, really interesting PowerPoint presentation where he's like, hey, guess what? All religion is total crap. But then one of the Mormon missionaries is like, well, actually, no, you're full of crap because, you know, you've talked about Judaism and Judaism is the original sort of Christianity, yet there's only so many practitioners, but you've completely left out the fact that the Holocaust wiped out 6 million Jews and all this sort of stuff. So it then becomes this real kind of battle of wits. But then into the, I would say, the final third of the film, it just goes into a straight horror film where they're locked into this dungeon underneath the house and they have to try force their way out of it. I don't want to give too much away. I will say Hugh Grant is brilliant in this. Like, he is just really kind of knocking it down at the minute in terms of, like,
even in the trailer, he looks like he's having so much fun.
That's it. Yeah, you can tell that he actually enjoys playing really terrible people. Like, he's just no, but
yeah, it's liberating.
It's liberating for him because, like, you know, you think of Four Weddings and a Funeral, you think of 2 Weeks' Notice, you think of all these films that he's
done, floppy hair and all,
the floppy hair, charmingly befuddled, and all the rest of it. Like, and he's done it well, and he's made a great career out of it and everything. But now that he's of an age where he can play sinister people, he really, really, you can see he enjoys it so much. And the directors of this as well, Simon Beck and Brian Woods, they previously wrote A Quiet Place. So they're really good at kind of having these very smart horror films, you know, that they can take a high concept like, you know, questioning religion or A World Without Sound and then making it believable and making you connect with the characters in it. So I really enjoyed it. This is really, really good.
Did the two parts, so you described the first bit which is more discursive, where he's trying to make them doubt what they believe themselves, and then suddenly they're locked in a basement. Do those two bits kind of connect with each other?
A bit. I mean, it's a bit, I will say, it gets very silly, as you would imagine.
Is he trying to make them choose between belief and not belief?
That's it. Yeah, he does this. There's this bit in it where he basically writes on the door belief. He has two doors leading down into a cellar that will leave them out of the house, and one is written on it is belief, and then the other is disbelief. And he goes, pick which one whenever you want, and, you know, you can take that one. And then it becomes this whole thing of, well, how can we? It's a logic question where it's like, okay, which, I have no information to tell me which door is going to lead me out, so which one do I pick? And it's like, okay, the person who has written this, are they telling the truth? And it becomes this sort of logical fallacy question. You don't really need to know any of this stuff.
Yeah,
like, you can just watch this and enjoy it for what it is, or you can kind of dig deeper into it. And then it becomes, you know, is the only true religion control? You know, are these people actually, you know, questioning their own faith, or are they simply just questioning it because, you know, Hugh Grant's character is putting it to them and all the rest of it? So, it's good. It's one of the more inventive horror films I've seen this year, to be honest.
Yeah. Any boobs in it?
No.
No. Okay.
No boobs.
Well, that's the modern way, apparently.
We're all prudes.
Yes. Clint Eastwood has directed 40 movies.
Yeah.
Crikey, I wouldn't have thought it was that many, but
his 40th is premiering this Saturday.
Oh, today, Juror number 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw it, Jim. It's in cinemas today.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And?
Crap.
Oh, no.
Well, this is it. So Warner Brothers are giving it a bit of a swerve. Like, they're only releasing it in 50 films across the whole of the US. So literally just enough that it could maybe be a contender come award season. But if that's all they're putting it into in terms of theatres, they're not going to be pushing it. And there was even a source close to Warner Brothers who said that basically the decision to put it in theatres at all was a gesture of gratitude to him for his career, because he's had a long standing relationship with Warner Brothers
for years going all the way back to, like, you know, Hang 'Em High and stuff like that.
Oh, God, that long.
Yeah, that long.
And, like, he'd be older than Willie Nelson at this stage.
He's 94.
There you go. That's at least a year.
Which is why people are suggesting it may be his last film.
And why was it crap?
It's like a TV movie. Like, it's interesting you say that they kind of put it into cinemas as a gesture of gratitude. Mm. Like, if you had saw this on, like, a Sunday afternoon or something like
But it was originally meant to be a streaming
thing,
movie.
Yeah.
And then kind of some way through the editing process, the post-production process, they decided to release it as a kind of feature.
I don't see why, because there's nothing in it that's terribly cinematic. Like, I mean, it's just your bog standard legal drama, you know? Like, I mean, the performances in it aren't anything to write home about. Like, it's got Nicholas Hoult and, you know, Kiefer Sutherland and Toni Collette. It's a decent cast. Like, I mean, they're not doing anything that kind of blow your socks off.
I mean, it's funny. I was going to say it's such a shame because he's had such a auspicious career.
Yeah.
But, like, literally, maybe that's what people in Warner Brothers are thinking, you know.
He should have walked away after Brandt Arena.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Arena was like the perfect swan song. Great film, great performance, great script. And just like, okay, park it there.
What was that, 38?
Oh, that was...
But it was probably, no, further back than that.
Yeah.
I thought Gran Torino.
Gran Torino was like 2010, I want to say.
Yeah, it was there or thereabouts. Park it there or there, I like that. Cause it's obviously.
Okay, appreciate it.
And it's all over for reality television. Tell me it's true.
Yes, I'm kind of slightly delighted about this. But yeah, the latest production stats. This is looking at the TV industry and what's actually in production at the moment in Los Angeles as a kind of future kind of guide of what will be coming out. And it's down 60% year on year. So it's not the safe bet for TV companies anymore, given the nature of streaming. And it was always the kind of entertainment that people would just have on in the background. It doesn't really grab people the same way. But yeah, it's
too much nudity and sex. That's wrong with it.
It only came up because of strikes anyway.
Like, yeah, I mean,
Like, Cops only started because of the writer's strike. And then the Kardashians started again. That was the 2008 writer strike, I think it was, when that kind of came into action.
But I think as well, though, in the era of social media where, like, people were seeing stuff on Kardashian's social media pages, but then not actually seeing it in the TV show until 9 months later. It just didn't make any sense. It already looked ridiculous that it was called reality TV, but that really just was the death knell, I think.
And even you look at, like, something like Love is Blind, for example, like, there are people that go into that show that know exactly what to do in order to kind of to supercharge their chances of being on screen. And then you see them getting, like, the sponsorship deals through Instagram and all the rest of it. Like, it's become, like, there's this wider theory that, like, the age of celebrity is dead now, because we can all see through it now. We all know that, you know, relationships and stuff are being manufactured. Like, you see Sabrina Carpenter and Barry Keoghan, it's like everyone knows that that's just a PR relationship and stuff like that. And then you see sites like Dumois and everything having huge business, basically just unraveling and just unearthing all this stuff. Like, and that's like, it's all a load of BS, really.
I'm agreeing with you for once, Brian.
Thank you.
God, what a terrible world we live in. You are listening to the Moncrief Show and Newstalk. We do have to take a break. After that, more movies and booze.
What are you going to do with this money?
Well, the first thing I'd like to do with the money is buy a horse for the children.
Wow.
And add to our collection.
News Talk's Cash Machine.
A horse?
It's a
Most people are, it's a holiday or an extension or you know, liposuction. A horse? How much does a horse cost anyway?
40 grand.
40 grand, well, clearly.
Yeah. Or maybe, I don't know. Like,
a racehorse wouldn't even cost that much, I don't think. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. Is there like an equivalent website for horses where you can look it up? What's the average
well,
horse
Well, there's
price?
Goths and there's like Tattersalls and
okay,
stuff
that'd
like
be
that.
Fancy horses. This is for the kids. This is just a fun horse.
Maybe she just meant a toy horse.
Maybe she meant a toy horse.
Well, she
maybe
should have been clearer about that. The kids sounded like they thought they were getting a horse.
Yeah.
Like 40 grand for a horse. Is it like the horse from Brave Star? Is it 2020? Like,
I don't know. We're totally ignorant here. We're not up in the horse prices. Anyway, let's toast horses everywhere. Linda, tell us about the red wine.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a producer called Zanato. Okay. And they are around since the 1960s, family owned winery. Sergio Zanato and his wife Carla and son Alberto, who is an absolute dote. He's a really nice guy. They make wines in the Veneto region in Italy. And this is, have you heard of Valpolicella?
Yes, of
okay.
course.
Okay. So have you heard of Rapasa?
Mm.
Okay. I am on Movies and Booze.
Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, maybe not all
the listeners. I don't know what the names mean. I've just heard people say them.
Okay.
It's like horse. I don't know what that means.
Know yeah. what are yeah.
different.
A little okay. different.
So Valpolicella is the style of wine that's kind of basic, easy, with a blend of grapes from the region. Rapasa is the next level, and then Amarone is the step level up. Okay, so that's like a really full-bodied, rich, could be 16% alcohol, like Ooh. A big sitting-down wine for sure. So this one is the in-between, and what happens is to make an Amarone, you dry the grapes, they're left out to dry, to raisin, right? And then this Valpolicella base wine is repassed over the dried grape skin. So it has a secondary kind of fermentation thing going on, and it's really adding complexity and depth to the wine. So you should be getting kind of rich spice, Christmas cake kind of things going on, really cherry tart, all of this gorgeous richness and spice. So this has spent 18 months in French oak barrels.
Okay.
That do cost that extra bit of money. So this wine is going to set you back between like 28 and 30 euro. It is the Silver Star winner in the under 30 old world category. It's just so rich and smooth and silky. There's like zero tannin. It's just so
it's
silky
lovely.
Smooth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what would you eat with that? Well, you don't need to eat anything. You could totally just drink. It's a gorgeous gift as well. But think of a real kind of venison ragu or something really as rich like that as well. I love it with duck and a cherry sauce as well.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I know, yeah. And it's amazing. But Parmesan cheese, a really good hard aged cheese, and this is just gorgeous. It's a sipping
wine. It's
really nice. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Duck and cherry sauce.
So, yeah, well, you can get that lots of places, all the independents, Jus de Van, Portmarnock, McHugh's, Martin's off license, Wine Online, Whelehan's, the Wine Centre in Kilkenny, Sweeney's D3, and Donnybrook Fair.
And sorry, Linda, how much does it cost?
So it's under 30, so between 26 and 30 okay. in various places.
Yeah. Okay.
But
yeah.
again, like, it's cracking for yeah. an under 30, and it's beautiful packaging, gorgeous gift.
Yeah, indeed. Any chance you could give the spelling for the wine?
Yes, Zenato, Zanato is the producer, and then Rapasso, it's a Valpolicella, Rapasa. Yeah. This wine is called Rapasa, Rapassa.
Okay,
and
good stuff.
I've tagged the social as well so they yeah. can see it.
Armie Hammer is back, or he's not really back acting.
Well,
is this like dipping your toe in the water if you've got a podcast? Well, I suppose anyone can have a podcast.
Yeah. And I mean, he was quite rightly cancelled back in 2021 when multiple women came forward with accusations of various degrees of abuse. And then there were text messages that came to the fore. I'm not even going to describe them on air because they're actually quite disturbing and very unusual. And he has slowly been trying to ease his way back into public life over the last while by doing interviews on other people's podcasts.
Right.
Stand-up guys like Piers Morgan and Bill Maher. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. So he's gone for the woke mob.
He's going right in there. He knows his audience. The Bill Maher podcast interview was particularly notable because he claimed that because he had been cancelled and so unfairly, and he had never actually done anything, he had only sent these text messages, accused people of kink shaming him. But that he was now broke as a result, which quite rightly, again, was taken with more than a pinch of salt because his grandfather famously oversaw the family business, Occidental Petroleum. I don't know that any company with petroleum in the name gives you the warm and fuzzies, to be honest with you. But yeah, so he has now released the first episode of his podcast. Do you want to hear the title?
Yes.
Army Hammer Time podcast.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, you know, I think really going for the intelligentsia market there. And it's a celebrity interview podcast. And the first episode features another stand-up guy, Tom Arnold.
Okay, so it's Cancel Corner, really.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
Yet to see who else he manages to scrape from that particular barrel, but...
I give it 5 episodes and he'll have Roseanne Connor, he'll have Roseanne Barr on it.
Yeah.
5 episodes. Yeah. And then Kevin Spacey. You can write, this podcast writes itself.
It does. So yes, that is his latest attempt at re-endearing himself to the public.
Mm. He wasn't even that good of an actor to begin with.
He really wasn't.
Like, he wasn't like some sort of like... once in a generation talent kind of thing. Like, you know, like
he ruined Rebecca because I was just like, he's not worth it, love. Go home.
And like, not even that as well, but like, he was just playing like preppy, like dudes that were kind of sinister. And it's like, yeah, wow, what a stretch.
On an oil company. Yeah.
What a stretch.
Again, the Occidental Petroleum kind of, yeah.
Typecasting. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Super Stroke Man, the Christopher Reeve story. Here's a clip.
This is Memorial Day weekend, 1995. My dad was competing in a cross-country horseback riding competition.
And was just so excited to get down there.
And my dad had been in London for some reason a few weeks before. We said goodbye and I ran upstairs to, like, I guess watch him, you know, walk away. And I remember him turning, I guess instinctively, knowing I would do that. And he gave this wave. That was the last time I saw him on his feet.
Is the movie kind of equally divided between, if you like, before the accident and after
the accident.
But it's after the accident?
No, I mean, what they do is they essentially just, they break the entire thing up. So it starts off with him, you know, the accident happening, what it meant to him, how deeply it damaged him. Like, there's one bit in it where I think it was his son Matthew Reeves said that, you know, if it had been 3 inches to the right, it would have killed him instantly.
Wow.
If it had been 3 inches to the left, he would have got up and walked away and kind of shook it off. But it was the fact that where he landed and how far he landed, because he was like 6'3", I think it was, and 200 pounds or whatever, that the weight on straight on his neck just broke it. Like, but no, the film kind of, it jumps back and forth. So it starts off in, you know, the 60s and the 70s, you know, the son of Franklin Delia Reeve, who was this well-known poet. His family as well was this really well-bred patrician family, you know, very, very, you know, waspy people, you know, very austere, very kind of didn't talk about their feelings and all the rest of it. He then goes to Juilliard. Then it jumps forward to, you know, 2002, 2003, you know, when he's, you know, trying to campaign for stem cell research and everything else. And then it jumps back then to, you know, him being cast in Superman. The whole purpose behind this is that, in, you know, from the end of the film, you understand that this accident, while it changed his physical being, it did not change his spirit. He was still the same man before and after. The only thing that different was that he wasn't able to stand up under his own feet. That he was still, like, you know, very much like a real courageous activist, that he really believed in the power of art to change people's minds, that he wanted to help people as well as helping his family. And that, you know, he was... I mean, I say this, and I this sounds kind of ridiculous, but like, he is Superman in my mind. Like, like, you think of, you know, Brandon Routh, you think of any other actor. I mean, you're comparing it to him. He is Superman. And there's this fantastic scene in the original Superman, the 1978 one, where he takes off his glasses and he turns into Superman. And it's so subtly done. There's no special effects. There's no nothing. And they talk about it in the film. But how Christopher Reeve did it was that when he was being Clark Kent, he kind of hunched his shoulders down and he kind of forced himself down. But then when he took the glasses off, he stood up and he's like, he looks exactly like Superman. And he's like, oh, I get it. That's how he's able to make Clark Kent and Superman look completely different.
Not just the glasses.
Not just the glasses, but his actual
really
physical frame.
That's really impressive through a gesture to be able to pull off something that has become a joke.
Yeah,
because
that's it. And like, when you see it in that scene, it's like, oh, now I get it. Now it makes total sense. And no other actor, like even Henry Cavill, none of them have ever been able to get that transformation from Clark Kent to Superman as well as he has done it. And yeah, so it talks about, like, you know, his, you know, belief in acting. Like, I mean, people don't know this, but, like, I mean, after he did Superman, his career really went downhill. Like,
yeah,
he just wasn't doing anything. Like, he wasn't getting the work. And he was going off and doing these, like, period dramas. Like, he did Remains of the Day. He did a lot of Merchant Ivory films and stuff like that. And his sons talk about it, that, like, he was basically doing movies of the week, which are these old TV movies. He was doing them literally just to pay the bills and keep a roof over their head and stuff like that. But all while he's doing this, you know, he's doing horseback riding and he's sailing and he meets his wife and you see these home videos and it looks like Ralph Lauren ads, like, you know, that kind of way. Like, it's so, he was so magnificent and he looked so kind of fantastic. And then when it cuts then to him, you know, with the ventilator sticking out of him and stuff like this, and you know, his kids talk about it, and there's archival footage of his wife talking about it, where they were terrified that he could die at any minute, where they'd have these things called a pop-off.
Yeah.
Which is literally where the ventilator would just give an extra bit of pressure and pop his ventilator out, or the pipe out, and he wouldn't be able to call for help. And he could be, like, sitting there for, like, 90 seconds, dying, essentially, before somebody walks in and shoves it back in, you know? So it talks about all these things, talks about his career. There's interviews with, like, Susan Sarandon and Glenn Close. Robin Williams was a big feature in it as well. The two of them were friends since college and maintained their friendship right up until Christopher Reeve's death. Talks about how Robin Williams basically paid to have their house converted for his new situation, that he bought him this, like,
they were really close friends.
They were, they were close friends. And, like, essentially, like, you know, after Christopher Reeve passed, Robin Williams basically became, you know, the primary caregiver, if you like, for their family. Like, he basically paid for all their educations and stuff.
Is this on streaming? Or
no, it's in cinemas. It's in cinemas. And it's worth seeing it in a cinema as well, because you do get the kind of how amazing he was as Superman and how great an actor he really was, but just never got the chance to get there, you know?
Okay, that sounds extraordinary.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
That's our lot for today. Thanks to Dee and Linda and Brian. Kieran's up next on News Talk, our production team today. Caoimhe Harney, Simon Tierney, Ken Doran, and for the very last time, our senior producer, Sean Reedy. And Sean is, Sean's actually worked on this show. We're going to be late, Sean. But feck it, what are they going to do? Fire you? Sean's actually worked on this show twice. He worked for a year and then he went off to work on another show and then he came back and he was working on the show for a year and a half. He's been around the kind of this radio group for about a decade, working on various stations. I don't want to slut shame him, but he's been around the place kind of thing. We had a big thing today where, there was a presentation and everybody said how much they'd miss him. And everybody said how, he's an extraordinarily good producer. But maybe what people didn't mention as much of, and for any listeners, it doesn't matter where you're working. Half of it is the work you do. But the other half, and the very important part, is the people that you work with. If they're not like Sean Reedy, if they're not thoroughly wonderful human beings, then it's not worth getting up and going to work in the morning. And the one thing I will say about him is that even now, he's not feckin' crying. Right, that's our lot.
He's a robot.
He's a made of rock. That's our lot for today. Kieran's up next. As we say, have a lovely weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.